My name's Dismas Omondi. I was suspected to have committed robbery with violence, which carries death sentence. I was found guilty and I was convicted and sentenced to suffer death.
This is the story of a man who spent 13 years in a Kenyan prison for a crime he didn't commit. For the first 10 years on death row, he was locked in a small room with 12 others for 23 hours a day.
We were having a routine, especially on my side. After waking up in the morning, you request them, they push aside, then three of you warm up, do some exercises. After there, you wait for the doors to be opened for that 15 minutes. In that 15 minutes is when you go to the toilet, you wash, you clean your clothes, then you go back.
Like most other Kenyans who face court, Dismas Omondi had no lawyer to defend him when he was convicted and sentenced to death. In prison, he never stopped fighting to prove his innocence, except when he was helping other inmates. Every day after washing and praying, he would study the law.
I take some bit of Bible reading, 1 hour. Then I start perusing for the court proceeding, the files of my colleagues, because most of them knew that I was the one who was assisting them. So that one kept me going. Even right now, because I don't have practicing certificate, but I can perform well more than other lawyers, because I've been doing those things practically, and people were being acquitted.
I'm Catherine Fellows, and I went to the coastal city of Mombasa to meet Dismas for the BBC. I wanted to hear his story and discover more about how his example has led to hundreds of other prisoners in Kenya gaining legal skills and getting out of jail.
So, Dismas.
Yes.
Where are we?
We are at Tononoka in Mombasa. This is where my sister stays, and this is where I was welcomed when I came from prison after 13 years.
After 13 years struggling to get new evidence and numerous court appearances, Dismas Omondi finally won his appeal.
Welcome.
The judge agreed that neither of the witnesses who accused him of robbing them could have identified him beyond reasonable doubt. It was dark when the crime took place, and Dismas was arrested almost a month after the incident.
How are you?
Hello,
welcome.
How are you? My name is Catherine.
I'm Florence.
Dismas's sister Florence visited him regularly in prison and never doubted her brother's innocence.
Dismas, I'm the eldest. Welcome. Have a seat.
Okay.
I just come to this area. This is what the judges are saying.
Once we were settled, Dismas showed me a precious copy of the appeal judgment.
The upshot is that this appeal succeeds. The appellant's conviction is quashed and the sentence of death imposed upon him set aside. The appellant should be released from prison forthwith.
How did you feel when you heard those words being read out?
Actually, when I heard those words being read by the learned judges, I did not believe my ears. It's when I was told by the clerk in Kiswahili, because I thought that English, I did not get it well. He told me, umewachiliwa, you have been released. It's then I came to realize that I was not wrong. I was very much happy. Tears of joy just came automatically out of me without knowing.
And the place you came to, the place Florence brought you to, was here, this home.
This is the place I came.
That day was raining.
It was raining.
What he was asking for was tea. For a long time, he has never had tea for 13 good years. So I prepared.
How did that cup of tea taste, Dismas, after all that time?
I cannot even explain. It was delicious, like something I've never tasted in my life, that tea.
I want is tea, Florence. And tea was here in plenty. And it was raining. It was like God was blessing him in a way. after that long stay in prison.
Florence did everything she could to help her brother. She spent exhausting years battling the bureaucracy of Kenya's justice system, and she finally found a pro bono lawyer who helped him with his appeal. But Dismas himself had done most of the legal legwork to win his case. In prison, he was getting a reputation as a fount of legal advice.
There was a certain missionary, he's an American. He was coming to prison, and I requested him for some books. This grey book which contains the laws. And also we are getting some past judgments. The officer in charge allowed me to access the same. So in case I want any judgment, so that I can refer it to a certain case, I just give them the number, then they bring the same to me.
In 2007, after Dismas had spent 10 years segregated on death row, a new prison governor arrived in Mombasa. Wanini Kireri introduced reforms which changed the lives of the inmates completely. She abolished the practice of locking prisoners up for hours on end and invited in organizations offering education, training and legal advice, including the groundbreaking Kituo cha Sharia.
Immediately she came, then the doors were open. I really praise her, God bless her, whenever she is. I'm telling you, it was like I was released. Just getting that access to mingle with other inmates, is what I was feeling that I was outside already. It was very great. Things started working well. Kituo came and other organizations.
Kituo cha Sharia, which means place of law in Kiswahili, was set up in 1973 by a group of Kenyan lawyers, including the current Chief Justice, Willy Mutunga. They were concerned by the lack of legal help available to poor Kenyans and determined to devote some of their time to working for free. Since then, Kituo has evolved into a campaigning group on issues such as abolishing the death penalty, which is still in place in Kenya, though no one has been executed since 1987.
My name is Alan Nyange. I work for Kituo cha Sharia as an advocate in the regional office in Mombasa. Yeah, that's me.
Alan Nyange knows Dismas Omondi well. They met when the prison was opened up in 2007. Alan asked the prisoners what Kituo could do for them, and they told him, train us in law so that we can become proper paralegals.
It just started as a discussion with two of the inmates. We all understand that in Kenya, almost all the prisoners or inmates are not in a position to hire a lawyer. The services of a lawyer are very expensive, so most of them end up defending themselves without the aid or the assistance of a lawyer. And the office staffing cannot hire lawyers for all of them. So the best thing is to get them to become their own lawyers. So we selected about 20 inmates who could read and write English. We took them through a training process on the legal process, the trial process, what is expected of them in court, what kind of questions to ask if it is coming to cross-examination. We bought them books, we bought them computers, we gave them printers and stationery, and we started now running a small office where they would come up with a duty rota and allocate themselves time within which to sit in that office and advise anybody who has any legal problem.
This is the office. Yeah, this is the documentation office.
Hello.
It's mostly with the convicted prisoners. So we are around 8 officers.
Hello.
Sergeant Peter Miner is showing me around Shimolatewa Prison, the place Dismas Omondi was incarcerated for 13 years.
The death row convicts as of today is 177.
The documentation office is the place prisoners are brought on arrival from court. Their paperwork is stored here, and their clothing and any other possessions. Yellowing ledgers and files of mostly handwritten court rulings are stacked on desks. Papers carrying words that have sealed the fate of the men inside.
Some of them comes and narrate the whole story. He tells you actually how it happened. Then, to some extent, we are human beings and we can check on the issues. Some of them we realize that they are here illegally.
You believe some of them?
Yeah, we believe some of them are here illegally. But due to the fact that they do not have that legal knowledge, they do not have somebody to assist them handle their cases, they end up landing into the prison's facility.
Why was this guy sentenced twice? We are seeing two sentences here.
These are not two sentences.
I've come to the prison's legal center to meet the team of prisoner paralegals Dismas Omondi used to head.
A prison sentence and a fine.
Distinguished-looking men, many grey-haired and bespectacled, are discussing a case.
Is that we have a fine of 1,300 or 3 months.
Since the legal centre was set up, it has overseen over 3,000 successful appeals.
My name is Douglas Owier. I'm a paralegal since 2007. I was sentenced to death. Abdi Mwaka is an inmate who also served death sentence. This is his file. I help him with written submissions. On Tuesday last week, his sentence was reduced from death to 7 years imprisonment. And we have another inmate also. He was acquitted, but his release had already came. He left yesterday. So Abdi's here. Maybe he can tell more how it happened in court, because I was not there.
Haile iko na shukuru sababu nilikuwa naomba Mungu at least sababu Douglas akiniandikia alikuwa ananiambia.
Abdi told us he was so grateful to Douglas and the other paralegals. He said when he was sentenced to death, he thought he was going to lose his mind. But with a much reduced sentence, he feels hopeful again. Like so many prisoners, Abdi felt totally confused and overwhelmed when he first appeared in court. He had no lawyer and no idea how to defend himself. This is Mombasa's High Court, where most of those who end up in Shimolatewa prison are tried. Stephen Rietsch is chief magistrate in Mombasa. Presently, he and his colleagues have about 3,000 cases awaiting determination.
Doing some work at the port without authority, stealing.
What proportion of cases would you say are poverty related?
More than 80% of what we receive here are poverty related. Like this one, you can see it's grievous harm. Grievous harm is that they have assaulted somebody. You can find it's very likely that they were quarreling over some resource or some other one issue or another.
Mombasa's courts have improved lately after a concerted effort to clear a backlog of older cases. So has the chief magistrate noticed the impact of the prisoner paralegals on defendants?
Come the first day, they may look ignorant and don't know, but once they have exposure to the paralegals, they know their rights. I see this when they come back, they ask for statements. For instance, the statements of the witnesses. They sometimes even ask for adjournment for time so that they can prepare their defense. I can see them asking intelligent questions to the witnesses who are testifying against them. Some even make submissions on law, points of law which have been raised, which in my view is a great improvement. And I think the paralegals in prisons and the legal aid clinics, which are done regularly with the support of the pro bono lawyers, it's really doing a lot in terms of benefits to not only the accused persons in prison, but even to us. They make our work much easier. Yes.
I'll tell you for a fact that most of them are even better than lawyers, trained lawyers.
Alan Nyangi, a lawyer himself, is in no doubt about the effectiveness of the prisoner paralegals. Dismas Omondi was one of the first batch of prisoners in Kenya to be trained as a paralegal.
Dismas, he has been able to secure acquittals of more than 250 people. So Dismas is more versed with the criminal law because over 13 years experience in criminal law, basically that is someone who is more conversant.
He had all the time.
He had
nothing else to do.
Yes, and he's motivated by the fact that that is how you get people off the system and that is how you might be able to go home. So when you ask how good these paralegals are, I'll tell you they know the system in out, they know all the loopholes, It is only in few very complicated cases that they may not be able to address or to assist. And even the people with complicated cases, they know themselves that I have a very watertight case and I need some external expertise.
What's this?
This is the first certificate of the training.
Oh, okay. 26th of November 2007 to 29th of November 2007.
Yeah, exactly.
Certificate of Participation.
Yeah.
Dismas...
Ayo.
On the ferry heading to Likoni on the south coast of Mombasa, where Dismas now lives, he shows me the certificate proving his credentials as a paralegal. Ex-convicts face huge stigma in Kenya. And when he was released, Dismas was given the princely sum of 200 Kenya shillings, less than $3, to rebuild his life from scratch.
After my release from prison, I was staying with my sister. Then after some times, after getting somewhere to work, I rented my own house at Likoni.
Likoni is a cheaper part of town, but even here, Dismas can only afford to rent one room. We enter a narrow courtyard strewn with washing, passing the toilet and tap he shares with several neighbours. Not one of them knows that he's a former prisoner. One great consolation, though, is that Dismas quickly found himself a family. His young wife, Evelyn, invited me to sit on a floral sofa draped with white lace antimacassars.
Mimi ni Catherine.
Welcome. Have a seat.
Thank you very much.
This is my husband. I love her so much. But me, I have one child. She's 10 years. She's home with my mother. And one for my sister. She's in school. I live with her here.
You're taking care of your sister's child?
Yeah.
So you have one child here and one home in the village?
Yeah. One boy home, and now one girl here.
Dismas, do you have any children?
No, I don't have.
You don't?
Because when I was arrested, I was planning to get a wife. By then I was also still young.
How old were you when you were arrested?
27.
27. So you were not married at that time?
Yeah. Maybe by now I could be having a big child.
When did Dismas tell you his story, that he had been in prison for 13 years?
He don't tell me anything.
Were you annoyed that he hadn't told you?
Ulikasirika na Lisa, were you annoyed? Because I did not tell you.
Siku kasirika, juu nilikuwa najua, hiyo ni maneno kama ya kawaida tu.
She say she just felt normal because she normally know that as such incidents which normally occurs in life.
You just accepted it?
Yeah, because I love her.
Because you love him?
Him.
So do you feel very happy?
I feel very great and very happy because each and every day when I was in prison, this was the only thing which was giving me headache about getting a wife, because I was thinking, so I'm perishing in jail and I have not married and I'm the elder son in the family. And you know, in our community, even my younger brothers cannot marry before me. I must marry, then I open the way for them. So I'm very much happy at this moment. Even I'm growing big because I was not this way. I had a lot of tension, thinking about so many things, you know. I had ulcers now and then, you see, on tablets each and every time, visiting clinics, you see. So since I came out, nothing. I'm just okay. I feel very great and I praise the Lord for that. There is nothing very important in this world like liberty.
Your wife's little niece
Yeah.
has just come home from school.
Yeah. I'm very much happy being together with my wife and my niece. Actually, it's long time I was missing being with young children. I think it was terrible. That is another world altogether, because you cannot even see even a hen near you any day, any time. Leave about 10, it was not even easy even seeing birds around. Some of them, if they see this jongo, millipede, the black one, anything new there, it's not easy for one to see. You see your colleagues and all niwadas. So if you see any creature of that nature, you feel very happy. Yeah. And you can even take it and keep it in yourself.
Is it your little millipede pet?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
People did that, did they, sometimes?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Mm. They keep it. At least they feel very much happy seeing such a creatures. In fact, when it reaches in the night time, some of the inmates were very much happy because they will see a gecko, a lizard on the wall. So you can even spend 1 hour watching at the same, the way it moves. It tries to hunt for its prey. So I came to realize that each and everything in this world is very much important.
Are you a completely different man now because of what you went through?
It was very hard, actually, but through that hardness, I learned so many things. Perseverance, patience, endurance. Actually, I learned a lot. In the first place, when I entered prison, I had no any knowledge about legal matters. And as I was able to go through the training, I was able to prepare my case and assist other inmates. And even outside here now, I have assisted so many people. Some of their matters before court, if they want to raise any complaint, I'm trying to direct them, even in the community. So actually, I came out with something.
You're listening to the BBC World Service with me, Catherine Fellows. After the news, join me to discover how the success of Dismas Omondi and his fellow prisoner paralegals in Mombasa has exposed the shortcomings of many Kenyan lawyers and of the country's legal system.
Weekends on the BBC World Service.
Today, that notion of equality of opportunity is a myth.
Nobel Prize-winning economist and advisor to world leaders Professor Joseph Stiglitz believes a global elite has manipulated the political system to grow its own wealth at the expense of everyone else.
You know, there are two ways to get wealthy. One is to create wealth. The other one is, if you can take a larger slice of the pie, sometimes making the pie even smaller, that's the other way of becoming wealthy.
He says the resulting deep and growing inequality is a key factor in the current global economic malaise. We're with an audience in Paris to interrogate his theories and his radical solutions. Join me, Justin Rowlatt, for Exchanges on the Global Economy with Professor Joseph Stiglitz. Online at bbcworldservice.com.
Kenyan prisoners are using the failings of the legal system to get themselves out of jail.
We don't want to ask you whether you did it or you did not do it. We try to discredit the evidence that is being advanced. So once there is inconsistency and maybe there's a provision in the law that has been breached, then the High Court judges or the judges of appeal, they do not have any other option apart from releasing you.
Law Behind Bars continues after the news.
BBC News with Jerry Smith. A jury in the United States has acquitted a Neighbourhood Watch volunteer of murdering an unarmed black teenager in February last year. George Zimmerman shot dead Trayvon Martin in Florida, but argued that he acted in self-defence. Trayvon Martin's father said he was heartbroken by the verdict, and there have been calls for protests in the coming days. A BBC investigation has found that more British soldiers and ex-servicemen took their own lives last year than died fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan. The BBC Panorama programme has learned that a total of 50 serving and former soldiers committed suicide in 2012. In Iraq, more than 20 people have been killed and dozens wounded in bomb attacks on two Sunni mosques in the capital Baghdad. Both bombings happened on Saturday evening after special late prayers for the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Another 11 people were killed in a series of attacks elsewhere in the country. The United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has strongly condemned an attack on the international force in the Sudanese region of Darfur, which killed seven Tanzanian peacekeepers. Mr. Ban demanded swift action against the perpetrators. The Canadian film actor Cory Monteith has been found dead at a hotel in Vancouver. The 31-year-old actor is best known as one of the stars of the hit American television show Glee. One of the world's last telegram services is shutting down today. India's state-run television company says it has decided to close its 163-year-old telegram service because it was losing more than $20 million a year. The Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling has secretly written a crime novel under a false name. The book, The Cuckoo's Calling, was published in April and is about a war veteran turned private investigator. Ms. Rowling's secret was only discovered when the London-based Sunday Times newspaper investigated how a first-time novelist could produce such an assured debut. BBC News.
Hello. Good morning. Are you happy?
Yes.
So I want to welcome the Kituo cha Sheria. We feel very happy as Langata Women Prison. This is the best, let me say the best training you brought for us today. Can we give an applause?
Langata Women's Prison is the latest penal institution in Kenya to receive paralegal training. Around 30 prisoners will spend the next 2 weeks learning their rights before the law, the procedures of the court, and how to prepare a defense.
Just to say, as women, we have issues. Once a lady is put, convicted and sentenced, they get a shock and confusion.
Rows of women in black and white striped gowns sit in a classroom listening attentively. They look meek. Some are very young and one or two are pregnant.
I'm Susan Kangaha. I'm Mira Makini. I'm Dorcas Akini.
It's hard to believe that their crimes include murder, armed robbery, fraud, and throwing acid in a rival's face. I'm Catherine Fellows, and for this BBC programme, I visited three Kenyan prisons. I met men and women who admitted they were guilty, but also others who said they'd been locked up for months or years for crimes they didn't commit. The vast majority of them faced court with no lawyer to advise or defend them.
With this constitution, this new constitution, we are supposed to have lawyers. But when I was going to the trials, I didn't have a lawyer.
You didn't?
Yeah, I did it for my own.
Do you think it was a fair trial?
It wasn't. They didn't do any interrogations.
Were there any witnesses?
Yeah, but some of them lied.
As Mary Wanjiru Mwangi says, Kenya's constitution requires that those facing serious charges should be given an advocate, but due to lack of resources and lack of lawyers, this often doesn't happen. Mary admits she was guilty of involvement in a carjacking, but doesn't think she should be on death row.
62, here, she shall be sentenced to death. No matter what you do,
now, thanks to the legal training she's receiving, she feels she has a chance of appealing against her sentence. A breeze of hope is blowing through Kenya's prisons, and as more inmates gain legal knowledge, more appeals are being won and more prisoners are being released.
We are told to come back after 14 days for mitigation. Is it constitutional? Is it?
You see, for this statute.
Caro Wamboi-Thero found herself accused of murder after two robbers were beaten to death by a mob near her home. Her story is that she was the one who called the police, but they took so long to arrive that when they did, she and her boyfriend were the only ones left to accuse. Because she's accused of murder, she was given a state lawyer, but she feels he let her down badly.
We were charged with murder. We plead not guilty. That was on January 17th. We were given a hearing date on June 13 and 14, he didn't come. The judge was ready. There were six witnesses. The state was ready. Everything was ready. He didn't come. So the judge became angry and he was like, I'm ready. The witnesses are there and your advocate is not there. So you go come back on November. I tried to raise my hand and the judge was like, no, you go come back on November. And even took another file and the court clerk called the next accused person. I was like in the dock, I was crying. I was like, no. From court, I was taken to cell. I met other inmates. They were so smart. Those ladies were so smart. And I was like, you also knew in here. They were like, no. They told me I've stayed there for 3 years. I've stayed there for 6 years. I was like, God, I'm going to stay in prison. I asked them, you're convicted? I said, no, we are remandees.
So one of them had been waiting for her trial for 6 years?
6 years, yeah. And I was like, why have you stayed for that long? She told me that maybe today the judge is not there, tomorrow the lawyer is not there. The other day maybe the state counsel is not there. So you can't proceed without the state and the lawyer and the judge and the witness. They all have to be present for you to proceed. And I was like, Connie, we don't have a right to talk because if the lawyer is not coming, why can't they give me another lawyer who will be, or they let me do the trial for myself? At least I can defend myself. November 14, we went, the state counsel was there. The lawyer didn't come.
Again?
Yeah. He was not there.
We are discussing the trial process.
Do you wish you had known this before your own trial?
Yes. We couldn't have been here this long. Yeah.
The woman Caro mentioned, who's been on remand for 6 years, is also attending the legal training course at Langata Women's Prison.
I'm Susan Kangaha Kegode.
I wanted to speak to you because I understand that you've been here on remand for 6 years. Yeah. Is that right?
Sure. I've been here for 6 years, since 2006.
How can you be on remand for 6 years? What's happening?
I'm also confused. Okay, I had the first trial. It went on. Then I was supposed to be read my judgment in 2010. So when I went to court, the judgment was dismissed. It was termed a mistrial. So I was to go back and start afresh, a retrial in another court before another judge. So I went back. The judge was like, she did not want to handle my matter. She said I should go back to where the matter was in progress, and whichever problem we had, we should have started from maybe in the middle where the problem occurred at. So she said she cannot handle the matter.
What are you accused of?
I'm charged of murder. Yeah, I'm charged of murder. It was a word fighting thing, then we fought now physically. It was just a fight, then she picked the knife, wanted to stab me on defending myself.
This was a woman that you knew?
She was a woman I knew. We were neighbors. So in the process of I trying to defend myself, I stabbed her.
Because Susan faces a murder charge, she's been given a state lawyer. I asked her if she has confidence in him after spending 6 years in jail without yet having been convicted.
How can I put it? I really don't have that much confidence in him, but I have to. So I just have to stick by him because I'm thinking, what if I change him for 6 years? I just want to be fair, okay? He's been disappointing me many times, but I just have to be with him.
But meanwhile, you are in prison and you've been here for 6 years.
I've been here for 6 years.
And you're worrying about being fair to your lawyer?
For the past 2-3 occasions I've been to court, he's not there. Now I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
And have you ever been asked to, for example, change the plea to manslaughter because maybe there was no intention to kill the lady?
Yes, the state counsel herself came up with that. And I agreed because I was eager to leave this place. I wanted to serve my term, then go. But when the file was taken to the DPP, the reply was no. It can't drop to manslaughter.
Susan's version of events was never tested in court. Since I met her, she's been acquitted and released because of lack of evidence.
The state allocates legal counsel for the accused person. This is a file that is forced on an advocate. So you can imagine I am not interested in criminal things. I am given a file by the court. I'm told, go and defend this person. I have other better, well-paying legal briefs, and this is a matter that is wasting my time. From the word go, nobody cares, you see.
Alan Nyangi is himself a lawyer. He's been working for Kituo cha Sheria for 6 years. The organisation, which means Centre for Law in Kiswahili, was set up in 1973 by a group of Kenyan lawyers who did care about the state of affairs in their country and wanted to devote some of their time to doing pro bono work for those who couldn't pay for legal help. Alan was behind the very first initiative to train prisoners as paralegals. He's very critical of some of his colleagues and of Kenya's legal aid system, such as it is.
So in most cases, most lawyers who are given those cases do not bother, and they would look for any opportunity to ask for an adjournment. Sometimes you are given a big fat file of a murder suspect. You would ideally need to look at it keenly and go through it thoroughly before maybe you talk to the suspect. But because of the size of the file, you would simply not want to read it. And when you talk to some of them, they would normally say, I need fuel to go and visit this person in prison. And the state is not giving me that fuel. It will only pay me after I am done with the case. So I would not even bother to go and meet him, and we would not have time to talk.
Hello, Senior Sergeant, how are you? We're here at the gate.
Paralegal training was introduced to Nairobi's Kamiti Maximum Security Prison just over a year ago. The officer who facilitated my visit was Senior Sergeant Ngui.
Our office now, paralegal office, is inside.
Okay.
I think you come here.
As I was to discover at Kamiti, prisoners here are choosing to get rid of their lawyers and depend on their fellow inmates. Lifer Joseph Karanja is chief paralegal.
Most of people here, they have gained confidence with the paralegal. And here I do have a case whereby, you can see here we do have Patrick Kimathi. He is one of us here.
Yes.
He is called Patrick Kimathi. Now he is writing a notice to withdraw an advocate.
Because to withdraw an advocate. So now he feels in a position to say, this man is not representing me properly.
And he is not the only one. There are many.
So he's not going to ask them for a replacement lawyer?
Yeah, he's not going to ask for a replacement lawyer. He is contented with what we have given him here.
So does he feel that, in fact, he's getting better help from you than he would from a different lawyer even?
Yes, that is what he suggests by writing this letter.
Do you have any idea how many people you've been able to help?
Yes, we have a record for that, Chief.
Yes, there are 120.
So this is people who have got out and
been
acquitted.
Been acquitted.
Senior Sergeant Ngui, before the paralegal came along, how many appeals would you have expected to be successful in that kind of time frame in about 9 months?
For instance, you could have even found that one prisoner or two released by appeal within a year.
My goodness, that is a big change, isn't
yes.
it?
So when the Kituo cha Sheria paralegal and that in, actually, we have tried, and so many prisoners have been released through appeals, as my learned friend has said here.
Your learned friend, you're addressing one of the inmates
learned,
as your learned
they
friend.
They are learned friends, because we train together, we really help together.
Usually, are you managing to prove that the person didn't commit the crime, or are you proving that the trial wasn't safe because the lawyers or the judges or the police didn't do their job properly? Because there's a big difference, isn't there?
No, what we do, we try to discredit the evidence that is being advanced. So once there is an inconsistency and maybe there's a provision in the law that has been breached, then the High Court judges or the judges of appeal, they do not have any other option apart from releasing you.
And so, that doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference whether you actually are guilty of the crime or you're innocent.
Yes, you're very right. We don't want to ask you whether you did it or you did not do it. What we are interested in, are we in a position to let this person go out of prison through court process.
Which, to be fair, is what a lawyer would do anyway, whether you're guilty or innocent. But I think the general public listening now would be interested to know, of that 120 people you've got out, how many do you think were actually innocent?
I can say 90%.
The prisoner paralegals are very proud of their success at finding loopholes in the cases before them. But it's a terrible indictment of Kenya's legal system that procedures are so often not followed correctly and that the law is so often broken by those who are supposed to enforce it. One of the worst things about such a flawed system is that it's impossible really to know who is innocent and who is not. It's very difficult for a genuinely innocent person to clear his name. People will believe, not surprisingly, that he's used the failings of the system to get out of prison.
Accused person, are you ready to proceed with the hearing?
I'm ready, Your Honor.
The prison paralegals at Kamiti coach each other when they're about to face court. And on the day I visited, it was inmate Maurice Kiberia who was practicing cross-questioning a witness.
Did you see the car leave? That's my question.
I didn't see it leave.
You didn't see it leave?
Yeah.
And you are able to see one of the attackers come. But you could not be able to see the car leave.
I can't be very specific about that.
You know, Mr. Kamau, you have to be specific on this. Because you are the one who was at that scene at the time. There is nobody else. You've not brought any other witness who saw it. Do you have any other proof apart from the word of mouth you're giving this court?
Only the evidence that I've given.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I wanted to find out whether Maurice was able to replicate the bravura performance he'd given his fellow prisoners, so headed the next day to the law courts in Thika, just outside Nairobi, where his hearing was due to take place.
In the 6013 of 2011, Peter Ndeli took it.
After a long wait in a packed courtroom and much whispered conferring, Maurice Kiberia was summoned before the magistrate. After a couple of minutes of inaudible exchange, it became clear that Maurice's case was to be postponed. He looked exasperated and put his hands to his head as he left the courtroom. I didn't think I'd be able to see him, but just as I was leaving, a policeman approached me and asked me to identify myself, then led me to Maurice. We talked through the iron bars of his cell.
Maurice, are you disappointed by what happened today?
Very much disappointed. Very much disappointed.
Are you surprised?
Not really, because this has been usual. There is that laxity, which is prevalent in our cases. And I think something must be done about it, because we are suffering in prison and things are not moving like they're supposed to move.
What did the magistrate actually say today? Because I was in the court, but I couldn't hear it very clearly.
The problem is she's new in this file, and the previous magistrate was transferred to Milimani in Nairobi, and she has not ever touched the file, so she said she wants to familiarise herself with the file so that we can she can take my defence tomorrow.
She said tomorrow, though, did she?
Yeah, tomorrow.
So at least that's not far in the future.
No, it's a bit better today.
Were you expecting to have a date so soon?
No.
Do you think it might have anything to do with the fact that I was sitting in the audience?
I think so. I really think so.
Though there have been significant improvements, Kenya's courts are still guilty of instances of incompetence and corruption. And no one is more aware of this than the country's Chief Justice. Willy Mutunga has a background in human rights, and his appointment in 2011 was greeted with enthusiasm from those campaigning for reform, but less enthusiasm from some of the existing establishment.
We're now dealing with the main issues delinking judicial functions from administrative functions, dismantling the cartels, coming up with processes and procedures that reflect honesty and, you know, and transparency. But I'm not naive to think that this judiciary is going to change in the 4 years I'm here. This will probably be a decade or more. But what I want to focus on is laying firm foundations. One thing I've done for all the prisoners I know is to get the proceedings typed I brought in the National Youth Service so that those poor people in prisons can have their appeals heard. You know, their cases were just pigeonholed. The proceedings were not ready and the appeals could not be heard. And that's why some of those Kenyans are in prison for 5 years or more.
One thing that the paralegals in both Shimalatewa and Kamiti said to me is that they would like to be able to represent their fellow inmates. I mean, do you see that as ever being practical, to have one inmate representing another in court?
You know, I would have no problems with that at all, because if you're talking about justice and somebody comes to my court and says, I don't have a lawyer, you know, but I have this paralegal and he's going to represent me, it should be the just thing to do. I've no doubt in my mind they can come to court and do a good job. From what I've seen of those paralegals in those prisons, it's a calling. It's not just a practice, it's a calling. The paralegals in prisons and outside prisons must play a role in the administration of justice.
Sergeant 6032 Mutua. Yes, my lord. My answers are yes or no as usual. Yes,
back at Langata Women's Prison, Susan Kegode, the paralegal trainee who has been on remand for 6 years, seems like a different, far more confident woman by the end of the course.
Is it true that you took the statements of the witnesses on the third day of July?
She's taking the role of defense attorney as part of the paralegal's graduation ceremony.
Now, Dismas was in Shimalatewa. Then Kituo went there, gave him training. Then one day he went to court.
Dismas Omondi, formerly head of the prisoner paralegals in Mombasa and now a free man, has been invited to Nairobi to inspire the women prisoners. He finally won his appeal after 13 years inside.
Good afternoon, all. What I can say to the graduates who are graduating today, this is a very great opportunity for you. I kindly request you, don't look these things in short terms, because they might be useful in your future.
But it was touch and go whether Dismas would arrive in Nairobi, because he didn't have the bus fare from Mombasa and had to wait for the money to be sent to him. Dismas Omondi has managed to get a job at Mombasa High Court, but not one that puts his highly praised skills and achievements as a paralegal to use.
I'm doing cleaning in the washrooms. I'm on the ladies' side. I'm trying to revisit whether the place is clean. I could not imagine that one day I would work in the toilet. Even when I was in prison, I couldn't even think of washing the toilets in prison. So that thing was not in my mind.
What would you like to do if you could do what you really wanted to do?
Okay. Before I was arrested, I was doing my own business. I was selling clothes. So if I can get capital, that is the first thing I could do right now. Secondly, if maybe I can get an opportunity of learning, because I did paralegal while I was in prison, I could pursue further studies.
Would you like to do a law degree?
Yes, I would, if I get that chance. And I hope I can make it.
I put it to Chief Justice Willie Mutunga that Dismas, who has lost his entire 30s and more thanks to the failure of the justice system and is having to rebuild his life from scratch, should at least be entitled to compensation.
The whole question of reparation, which is just and proper, is not in the laws anywhere, as far as I know.
Should and it be?
It should. It should. I think we should be held accountable for our incompetences. That's my honest, my honest opinion. If magistrates and judges know that they'll be held accountable for their lack of appreciation of the law, If the state also knows that it will be forced to pay reparations because of errors and being incompetent, something will be done. That's a just principle, definitely.
So is that something that you intend to pursue?
Well, it will have to be pursued by maybe civil society organizations. It's something that if Dismas writes to me, because I'm the chair of the National Council for the Administration of Justice, saying this is what happened to me, I'll take it to that council because I think it's just, you know, to discuss it. And it's only somebody like Dismas who will be able to push it because of the passion he suffered. I went to prison myself as a detainee, and I know that is what mobilized me to become a human rights activist, because I thought this should never happen to anybody. So I know where Dismas is coming from, and he shouldn't give up. You know, he should push that as hard as possible. Even if he doesn't get the reparation himself, some other inmate will get it.
When I last spoke to Dismas, he was still deciding whether to pursue compensation. As he told me, he has grave reservations about revisiting his own case.
I was also of the view that I file a petition of malicious prosecution. But the problem is one. You see now, I have been pursuing this case for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
If I start again, you see, it will waste my time. That's not the only problem.
You don't want to spend your whole life fighting cases?
You see, it will be like I'm fighting for my whole life in court.
Mm.
You know, there is one thing. If in the first place I was convicted without doing anything, what about now? They can even take my life. That's what I'm afraid of.
So you don't have any faith in the system?
I have faith, but I have fear on the other side. They are very much aware that they did wrong. So if I start again, how do you see that? Am I not going to be in a danger?
I don't know.
That's it.
I can't answer that question.
That's it. So to me, I know. That's the only fear that I have.
The achievements of Dismas and the other prisoner paralegals in taking the law into their own hands, winning cases and getting one another out of jail, are impressive. But Dismas's fear speaks volumes about the long way Kenya's criminal justice system still has to come before it wins the confidence of the Kenyan people. You've been listening to Law Behind Bars, a documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Catherine Fellows.